Welcome to Down Trails of Victory podcast, brought to you by Wrinkle Ford Creative Arts, the podcast that is seeking undiscovered stories from the trails of Southeast Texas. Your host is Dr. John Buck Ford, author of Down Trails of Victory, and his podcast partner, Judge Brad Burnett. Now sit back and enjoy today's special guest as we learn how they left their mark and influence on Southeast Texas.
Welcome, listeners, to another edition of Down Trails of Victory podcast. This is your host, Buck Ford, and joining me today, returning after a brief hiatus, my podcast partner, Judge Brad Burnett. Judge Burnett, it's great to have you back in the saddle.
It's great to be back, and I'm looking forward to uncovering more stories from Southeast Texas today, and I think we've got a great lineup of guests.
Yes, Brad, today we have a showcase. The Poor Nature's Groves 1975 State Championship season. You know, Brad, under the home stands at Indian Stadium are plaques that recognize the successes of PNG state champions. And on those plaques are the names of the players and coaches that were part of those journeys. And today, we have some players from that team to tell us what it was like as they went on that state championship run.
Okay.
And I'd like to now introduce today's guests. First, Jack Collazo was a two-year starter and all-district defensive back for the Indians. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bud. Appreciate you guys doing this podcast today. I'm pretty excited about it when I was notified to participate in it, and looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun, a lot of laughs.
Okay. Buck, I'd like to introduce Kirk Romero. Kirk was a multi-year starter as well as an all-district defensive end. Kirk, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. It's great to be on with this group of guys as well, and I have to put in a side note that I actually, as a junior, played next to your brother, Matt Burnett, and when he was a senior
okay.
on the 74 team. So.
Okay.
Yeah, me and Segura both, actually. But anyway, so great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Next, I'd like to introduce tackle Carl Segura. Carl was a two-year letterman for the Indians, where he played under legendary offensive line coach and subsequent head coach Butch Troy. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Buck. Like everybody else, I really appreciate y'all doing this, and the fact that you and your wife and Brad even go through the trouble of recognizing some of the historical things that have happened at the school we all know and love is pretty cool. I know it's time consuming for y'all, and I just wanted to say up front that I really do appreciate all the stuff that y'all do to make this happen.
Thank you, Carl.
Right. Well, thank you, Carl.
Okay, Buck, I'd like to introduce Andy Gilbert, a.k.a. Hands. He was an all-district receiver for the Indians, and was instrumental in many of the big plays that occurred during his two-year varsity career. And he also helped pull this podcast together and make it all happen, Andy. Thank you so much for all that stuff. Thank you for being here with us today, Andy.
Thank you, Brad. I tell you what, are you going to get me to start running some routes in this room in here?
I hope so. We're going to get excited, so get ready.
Yeah, I tell you what, I appreciate it. And we had a few bumps in the road trying to get it together, but it all turned out good, so
yes, sir.
Just ready to go.
Okay, thanks.
I'd like to now introduce Wilson Weber, who was a three-year starter for the Indians at inside linebacker, was the district defensive MVP, and made All-State in 1975. Wilson, we're glad to have you on our show today.
Buck, I'm honored to be here. It's a privilege, and I really want to say thanks to all of you. You know, you and Brad for pulling this together, and for Andy helping pull this together. It's a blessing. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce now Buck Gary Jofro. Gary was a 2-year letterman for the Indians and played outside linebacker on the state championship football team. Gary, thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you, Brad, and thank all of y'all. This is really great. We get together every year and tell these stories at our little golf tournament, and I'm glad that we're going to record some of them before we start forgetting them.
There you go. That's right. And it's okay to embellish them too, right?
Yeah.
Y'all are all going to be telling me the truth.
No, we never do that.
Yeah. No, I appreciate this. Thank you guys for doing this.
Yes, sir.
Well, again, I appreciate all of y'all making it for the show. And starting off, gentlemen, many of our listeners may not know what it was like to attend Port Neches Groves High School in the mid-1970s. Can you tell our listeners what that experience was like?
Well, if you saw the movie Dazed and Confused, that's got a little bit to do with it. But we talk about it all the time. People I've worked with, I hear them talk about their high school years. And really, a lot of them, they look back and they don't have any great memories. They were ready to get out of high school. It was not like that at PNG in the 70s. And y'all know that as well. Y'all were there. But it was a great place to go to school. You know, and everybody, as far as the football team and the other sports, everybody really supported us. My lifelong friends are still the people that I went to school with, you know, the guys on this call, plus a lot of other guys. It really set the foundation for me and some lifelong friendships. And it was some of the greatest years I've ever had in my life was during high school, really was.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting to go to school there, especially because my older brother went and my older sister went. So I got a lot of feedback on what it was going to be like. And it's just something, there was so much spirit hitting the halls. There was just so much spirit there and it just carried on into your life.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll throw out, add to that is that as we were coming up and we were in eighth and ninth grades, we looked up to a lot of the players like you, Buck and Brad. Granted, we were younger, but man, we looked up to you guys. You had some great teams yourself. Now, unfortunately you had a little bit of bad luck in the district level. Some of those teams that you guys had with the Bergeron years, the way the rules are now, y'all could have gone to state and even won state with one loss in district. So that's part of what I remember about going to school at that time as well.
Yeah.
Brad doesn't call them the Bergeron years. He calls them the Burnett years.
That's right. So wait for him to change the name of that stadium. You know?
Yeah. Kirk, you brought it up, but we couldn't get past Lincoln and – you know, y'all butted your heads against the wall a couple of times against Lincoln, but in 75, you knocked the door through then.
Yeah, we did, for everybody.
But before we jump into the football stuff, I'm going to ask you a question. Not counting the coaches, but who, as far as teachers or school personnel in the high school, had an influence on you guys or somebody that you can remember as a student?
I'll tell you what, y'all not going to believe this, but Frank Cheek.
Yeah.
He paid a whole lot of attention to me for some reason. I don't know. But every day in the hall, he'd ask me, how's it going? Are we going to win this week? And I end up keeping up with him later on after we got out of school and got on the deer lease with him. And we played a lot of football in that deer camp, me and him. So, yeah, Frank Cheek, God rest his soul.
Yeah, God bless him. He was an old Marine, and he carried that on in high school too, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
As a teacher.
He bust your tail, man.
Okay, anything else? Buck, I guess we'll move on.
Okay. Talking about the coaching staff, the head coach of the 1975 Indians was Doug Etheridge. And Coach Etheridge was in his third year at the reservation and had led the Indians to a state semifinal appearance the previous season. What are your thoughts on Coach Etheridge?
I'll start. This is Wilson. What I remember actually with Coach Etheridge goes back to ninth grade. You know, ninth grade in those days was considered junior high. And Coach Etheridge went to each of the campuses. We had three junior highs in those days, Old Groves, Woodlawn, and then Port Neches. And he came and met with each of the classes, the ninth grade classes, and basically told us that you guys have an opportunity to do something very special. You know, state championship is within reach. And quite frankly, I think a lot of us, in fact, I've heard Kirk tell this story a lot of us carried that with us, and we never even talked about it until after we won the state championship. But we all kind of remembered that, and that kind of set the vision for us. And so Coach Etheridge was very special. He was a great head coach. And of course, the coaching staff, I would say overall, the coaching staff was exceptional. We had a lot of coaches that went on to become either head coaches in high school or college coaches. And I think a lot of high schools really don't have that kind of opportunity to be coached by people like that. And they were just good men, and they loved football, but they also loved their players. And that came through.
Yeah, I do remember, Wilson, the visit that he made, because we were all at Woodlawn at the time. I'll never forget sitting in the gym and him telling us that. And I was like, wow, I mean, we really got something going here. So Doug Etheridge, I had so much respect for him. He was fair, you know, and once we got to know him after we all graduated, because we'd get together and go on the golf trips and he'd come, you know, he was a little goofy, but he was fun. He was funny and just had so much respect for him.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that day. I think it might have been the last day of school. We get to athletics, and Coach Granger said, okay, everybody out underneath the oak tree. And I wonder, what's going on, man? And also, he goes, I'm going to introduce y'all to the new head coach coming in. And we're all sitting there, you know, with a gleam in our eyes, you know. And he's talking, and he says, yeah. He said, what I see here is I really think by the time y'all seniors, y'all can bring home a state championship. And like I said, that just was like a brand, you know, and it just stayed with us, stayed with me all the way to the end. And I didn't know if he had done the same thing at Groves and Woodlawn, but
yeah, he did.
Evidently it was a great man, great head coach, and loved him to death, man. I tell you what, he just such a good guy.
Yeah.
He was, you know, a little different coaching style. He was very soft spoken, never cursed. Practice, mm-hmm. wasn't a rah-rah guy. We all respected him so much that when you messed up, and believe it or not, I messed up more than once, he just had a look he'd give you, and you knew you had done something you weren't supposed to do. He didn't have to yell. Now, some of the other coaches were better at yelling, but he was not like that at all. And like they said, as we got older and got to really spending time with him on a golf trip and other things, I realized as great a coach as he was an even better man. He and his family, they're all just special people. They really are. And we all miss him. You know, like we were fortunate that him and a lot of the assistants came on our annual golf trip, but we lost him a few years ago. And that was tough on all of us. We all do miss him.
Yeah. I just want to pick up on what all the other guys were saying, that it wasn't until like two, three years after we graduated, and I look back, I said, you know, I've never heard this guy say a curse word. It dawned it. It wasn't something that was stated at the time, but the way he motivated, and I agree with Carl, you wanted to do well for him. If you messed up, he kind of walked over and shuffled his feet a little bit, kind of gave you that look, and you felt you wanted to play well for him. It wasn't like he had a unique way of motivating kids, and it worked clearly.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Yeah, he used to do that. If you were on his team during the golf trip, and you were playing bad, he just do that little shuffle and look at you and just walk off.
I never played bad because I never saw that happen.
Oh.
You must have never played with him.
Yeah, I played with him and I saw the look. I'm lying.
You talk about a good golfer. I think he shot his age, what, 4 or 5 times?
No, more than that.
More than that, yeah. More than that. A lot more than that.
Yeah.
His gift as a coach was being able to get 110% out of all his players. And I don't know how he did it, but that was his gift. He could do that better than anyone I've ever known.
It's like old Bum Phillips used to say, he can take his and beat yourn, and he can take yourn and beat his. And that's exactly what Etheridge could do.
Well, one of our trips, I was, you know, as you probably figured out by now, I'm somewhat of a smart A, but I was joking with him, and I said, you know, Coach, I really don't think you ever got all the potential I had inside of me. I think I really had so much more to offer, and you never tapped into it. And he just kind of looked at me and shook his head and said, Carl, believe me, we got everything there was to get out of you.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, but I want to also add to something what Wilson said, too. The overall coaching staff, we were so lucky. I mean, those guys, I mean, you had Tim Nunez and Greg Davis. I mean, they all went high level in college coaching. You had Carswell and Bruce Bush. They all were head coaches and successful head coaches of their own in high school. You know, we were so lucky just to have around.
Yeah, that's a good time to mention them. The varsity assistant coaches that year were, as you mentioned, Bruce Bush, Paul Carswell, Ken Clearman, Greg Davis, Tim Nunez, Butch Troy, Phil Vergara, Wayne Wynn, and trainer David Finley. So I think we could tailgate that right there if you want to just talk a little bit about those guys.
I want to talk about David Finley.
Doc?
I tell you what, that's what we called him, Doc Finley. I tell you what, that guy was amazing of getting people back on the playing field. I'm not kidding you. He had all kind of machines, and I don't know what that was that he would put on them muscles for a pull muscle, but he was incredible about getting people back on the field quick. And such a good guy, so laid back. He was really a great trainer.
I think I spent more time in his office than anywhere else. As many injuries as I had, it seemed like I stayed in there.
Oh.
The ice bucket for the ankle. That was from the Forest Park game all the way to the state game, doing that. So, yeah, great guy.
Anybody come by and kick it here?
Oh, yeah.
All the time? You expected it. You guarded it with your life, but it didn't do any good.
Well, Buck started off when he first introduced me. He said, and I love the term legendary coach, Butch Troy. And Butch was one that we got to know really well as we got later in our life, and we did a lot of things with him. Wilson, really close to him as well. He came to our golf trips. He's probably, other than my family members, you know, my dad and maybe grandfathers, had more influence on me. He may not want me to say this because he didn't want me to blame him for all the stupid stuff I've done, but he had more impact than any other person on me in my life, and we still talk regularly. I love the guy. I do. And I was telling somebody, actually last night at the game, you know, I've got great parents. I'm lucky. The guys know my family. But my dad, I knew my dad loved me, and I still do. But back in those days, it was a little different for that generation to, you know, a guy to tell you that he loved you. But Coach Troy would do that all the time. And at first, I remember it just kind of caught me off guard early on. Now, that would make up for the times when he was chewing my butt out, because he was really good at doing that. We talked about...
Yeah, I was your position
coach.
We talked about
Coach Etheridge not raising his voice or cussing. That wasn't a tactic that Butch used.
No.
But he was the first one to get on you. And I don't care what position you played. If you messed up, come over here and grab you by the face mask. But he was also the first one to put his arm around you and tell you that he loved you, and don't let that mistake, you know, just forget about it. So he's a special guy for me. I just wanted to make sure that we had that on here. I love him to death. And again, I'm lucky I can still talk to him regularly.
I used to sneak into the offensive line's meetings. When we'd get through with mine, I'd go, and wherever they'd be, I'd sneak in there, and he'd run me out two or three times. And finally, he let me stay in there. I just loved to hear him talk and what he was telling them, man. He was such a good man.
As I remember, he always used to wear a kind of a rubber top.
Yeah.
And he would literally open his sleeves up and just sweat would pour out. He was notorious for wearing that. And he'd get right in there with you. He'd turn his hat around and, you know, he'd headbutt you. You know, and those types of things.
Tobacco juice spit in your face.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, I was in the last group that would go on the field, and Coach Troy always hung back in the locker room, and he had that last group, and he always used to say to us, you know, guys, you got to believe. You got to believe. And, you know, we did believe in our coaches, and we believed in, you know, what we were doing. And, of course, as someone said earlier, our community supported us. That just the culture and the values of PNG football. I mean, I remember going to the PNG games when I was a lot younger, and, you know, those guys were like professionals to me. You know, Brad Yu and Jeff Bergeron and Buck and that whole group were like watching professional team, and it just something you wanted to emulate, and it just kind of got indoctrinated into kids early in the elementary schools on Fridays and then the junior highs and so forth. And so it just kind of, and the communities rallied around us and supported us. So we were truly, truly blessed. And I think that helped kind of get us focused, you know, and be able to win state. It just kind of all the stars were aligned for us.
I tell you, my whole junior high year, elementary year, all I could do, I couldn't wait to bust through that paper on Friday night and seeing all them people, you know, in the stands. It's kind of like what Tip Durham always used to say, prettiest sight these eyes have ever seen is a sea of purple on a field of green. And yeah. I tell
trying
you.
Trying to make us cry or what?
Yeah.
I thought that was an Edgar Allan Poe.
Well, I just wanted to make the team.
Yeah. I think for me it was Coach Chor and Coach Bush because he was my position coach. But you know, everything you guys said about Coach Troy is just spot on because he was my baseball coach too. So I got to experience him in the spring in a baseball setting. So that was kind of interesting too. But in regards to Coach Bush, and this kind of goes right along with Coach Etheridge, they prepared us so well. Like, we were so in tune with what was going on with the game. Nothing was really shocking to us as far as the other team. For, you know, like preparation, mm-hmm. when they do this, this is going to happen. They used to hand out these, remember those sheets mm-hmm. with the plays on them, and they had percentages and all that? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I still have. I found mine the other day, yeah.
They gave us these sheets of offensive plays or defensive plays, and then it had percentages on them. And if it was third and something, they had like a 70% chance of running this play. And if you remember that, it just kind of made things easier when you're out there in the game. And
yeah, I mean, in formations, you knew what kind of plays they were going to run out of what yep. formations. And I mean, even in a state game, I remember, you know, we knew what plays they were going to run out of certain formations. And, you know, our coaches just drilled it into us, And again, we were very coachable and we listened. Mm-hmm. And we stayed focused on that. But we were tremendously blessed with coaches. And I would say that really the coaches that went out and scouted kind of the week before the opponents,
yes.
which were the junior high coaches, they were doing a wonderful job because they were feeding this information to our position right. coaches at the high school. And that's how everything was being developed, those percentages Jack was talking about and so forth. So the junior high coaches really are to be commended as well. I mean, they put their heart and soul into it, truly did.
Yeah, layer on top of what Jack and Wilson have just been saying. Several of the times we've talked to players that are on the opposite defense, you know, once we graduated and look back, you know, these teams, of course, we were the number one ranked team, right? So we had a target on our back. So they had these special plays that they didn't put on film or, you know, they practiced them, but they didn't put them on previous games. So they were special plays just for PNG. And so we get out there and they run out these plays against our defense or against our offense. And we were so well coached that they would come out and play they'd never shown anybody before. We knew exactly what the formation was. We knew how to defense it. We were yelling the plays out, how to combat it. And these guys were like, you know, how do they know that? We were so well prepared by our coaching staff that we could react to stuff that hadn't even been seen before on any of the game films.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the preseason. The 1974 team advanced to the semifinals. When you returned from Christmas break after the 1974 season and began the off-season program, in what way did the 1974 football season affect the expectations and mindset for the 1975 season?
I think the 1974 team was like our Lewis and Clark. They paved the trail. They're the ones that made it easier for us simply because we knew we could do it.
Yeah.
They were kind of in the blind. We just found out, hey, we can compete with all these teams in Texas. All we got to do is get out of our district.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a tough district.
Yes.
All I could think about the whole time was we should have won it. We should have won state championship that year. Two interceptions, you know.
For touchdowns.
Yeah.
Pick sixes.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, we got in there, we had a whole week of practice before we even knew we were going to be playing. Is that correct? Am I right remembering that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our off week was the lack week. Yeah, that's right.
Right. And then we get in because of a missed field goal?
No, extra point.
Extra point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I knew, you know, because then we go on this run and we almost win state, which was like, wow. So then we come back, and then I knew that going into that spring and that summer that, yeah, it's time to get busy and get to work. Get ready.
You know, Buck, I think what it did do for me personally, it said, okay, if you work a little bit harder and stay a little bit more focused, you know, than what you did last year. So it truly did, I think, as Gary said, it did pave the way and it set the bar for what we would need to do. And, of course, we were fortunate. We had a lot of seniors on that state championship team. But I think we all learned from that 74 team that, you know, just work a little bit harder, stay a little bit more focused, listen to your coaches, and this is what you can do.
And, you know, going in, we were the Cinderella team, right? We kind of, quote, lucked out because TJ tied Lincoln that year and that with that mixed extra point. And so we got into the playoffs. We beat French. We beat Texas City on that cold game. And then we get to quarterfinals against Baytown Sterling, right? And I even remember, oh, well, you guys have had a good run. I remember sitting next to one of our cheerleaders in class and asking, well, do you think you guys are going to win the game? Well, yeah, of course we're going to win the game. And even our parents, well, you guys have had a good run. Don't get your hopes up. It's like no one believed that we were going to win the football game. Literally, after we won that game, that's when we finally convinced everybody that we had a really good football. Well, and not only ourselves, that convinced us we could play with anybody. And then, of course, we get to ultimately to Brazoswood in the semifinals, who won the state championship. They were averaging 42 points a game, and they did not score against our defense. What Wilson was telling you, and Gary, everybody, if not for the 74 team, we would have had a good team. But that convinced us, yes, we could play with the big boys, and frankly, we should have beaten Brazoswood, and that's actually who won state that year. So that set the table for everything.
I couldn't agree more. The fact that Joe Fro even used the Lewis and Clark analogy is,
I was pretty impressed.
He must have went back and found his history book senior year or something. But anyway, that was impressive.
Hey, documentaries, man, documentaries.
He's been researching for this podcast.
Yes.
But I do agree that, you know, had we not had the success we had as juniors, that we may have not done it as a senior. And that one motivating factor for me, too, I remember after the Brazoswood game, we were in the, you know, we were in the locker room and everybody was upset and crying. And I remember looking around thinking, God, this is horrible. And then I looked at the seniors and I remember thinking, man, that's it for them. I remember that feeling the whole time that the next year and even going into the next year. It was like, I do not want to have that feeling. It had to be horrible, you know. And we've had great friends who were seniors on that team. You know, Brad's brother's one of them. And it was hard to watch the seniors, and something that I just prayed I didn't have to be a part of the next year. And luckily we didn't.
Yeah.
So I think the good and the bad motivated us, Buck, and I think we learned from it.
Buck, I got a little story about us getting into the playoffs that year. Of course, we beat TJ, and then Lincoln beat us. So the only way we could get in the playoffs is if them two tied. Well, that last game of the season, when they played, we had an open date. So my mom and dad were going to let me miss a couple of days that next week. And I went deer hunting in Medina, Texas.
Oh, boy.
And so we leave that Friday evening, get there late, get up, I go hunting. Killed a pretty nice 8-point. Well, the rancher is the only thing that's got a phone down there at his house. Yeah. And we're up on this hill. And if you need something, you got to call the rancher. Rancher's got to come up and tell you. Well, we're all sitting around that skinning pole, and we see this rancher coming in that old beat up Jeep, honking his horn and rattling and pulling up there. Hell, it kind of scared me. I thought something was going on. I went in the camp. Well, he pulls up and he gets out and he asks my grandpa, I said, Mr. Thomas, where's Andy? He said, well, he's in the camp right there. So I stuck my head out the door. He said, Andy, he said, you got to get home as soon as possible. I said, what's going on? He said, hell, I don't know. Somebody tied somebody and y'all going to the damn playoffs. I said, yeah. I said, what? He goes, yeah. He said, y'all going to the playoffs. So my grandma and them had to go back down, get on the phone. They put me on a plane that next morning in San Antonio, and I flew Houston, and Mom and Dad picked me up. I made it to school for Monday morning in practice. So that's my story about getting to the playoff.
Yeah.
Well, I got one. I don't know how many of y'all were in the stands at TJ Lincoln game.
I was there.
Were you? Yeah. Well, we couldn't believe it. We had a good little group of Port Neches people right there in the TJ end zone, okay? And it was kind of weird. TJ was ahead 13-7 late in the fourth quarter, and Lincoln comes and scores right there in front of us. Well, we jump up and yell with the Lincoln fans on the TJ side, which was kind of weird. We were getting these looks like they wanted to kill us. So everybody's quiet, and we're having to wait for this extra point because we know it's late in the fourth quarter. It's the only chance we have if he misses this kick. Well, it wasn't even close. It looked like one of Colazzo's duck hooks into the woods.
It wasn't that bad.
It went, well.
Come on.
It, almost. It went.
You could have said mine. Colazzo doesn't hit a duck hook.
Well, I was going to say if he whipped it, Wilson, then I could have used you, but I couldn't. and I thought about using Kirk, but he had to dribble it in front of him, so I couldn't use that. So anyway, he kicks it dead left, okay? So we are going crazy, and we're the only ones screaming and hollering out of the whole stadium because this has happened. Yeah. Well, people don't realize that wasn't the end of the game.
Right.
Lincoln kicks off to TJ, and TJ has nothing to play for. They can't go anywhere, but they were going to try and win the game. So they're throwing three straight passes, and all three plays were almost turnovers deep in their field. So they punt the ball to Lincoln, and they give them one more chance. Mm. So we're having to endure these bombs that they're throwing right in front of us by the goal line, and players are going up, balls tipping, going everywhere. But finally, it seemed like it took forever. There were zeros on the clock.
Yeah.
And none of us knew that, but at the time, that was the beginning of what we have right now. This.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
That's what started the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before we leave the 74-75 team, were there any differences between the 74 team and the 75 team? We alluded somewhat. I know, Kirk, you mentioned you played with my brother, Matt, who I'm very proud of. And, of course, Gary has a major neck problem. He told me a story about, like, Bull in the Ring, Gary, about Matt
Burnett. Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Oh, well, the nutcracker drill. I'm standing in line as a running back. And if you're a running back, you're counting who you're going to block for you and who is going to be tackling you. Okay. Well, I did the math and boom, I hit on Matt Burnett. Yeah. So I'm trying desperately to get out of that lineup. So I wouldn't have to deal with that. I can't remember who was blocking for me, but I told Matt, it didn't matter who was blocking for me. No, it didn't matter at all. No. So the rest of it, I remember getting the ball and going to the side of whoever was blocking for me. After that, I remember nothing.
Yeah.
They said I got up. I walked to the back to the end of the line, and I fell like a pine tree. Boom.
Ooh.
The next thing I remember, I'm in the old Finley's, got my shoulder pads off, and I see his face. He goes, "Hey, Jofro, you scared me a little bit. You wasn't coming around."
I mean, they hauled him off on a stretcher.
Oh, it was.
He had the smelling sauce.
Oh, I smelled.
And you wonder why he has a sore neck to this day, right, Gary?
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Yeah, that was one of my three concussions that I.
Oh man, bless your heart.
I got during my
You know, I will say that I played behind Matt. You know, I was a junior and he was a senior. And he was just an unbelievable three technique. I mean, he literally would just kind of take out two guys on the opposing offensive line. And he was just so fun to play behind because you knew he was going to get upfield and he was going to get penetration and everything. So it just allowed you know, it made it easy for me. So I appreciate Matt so much. He was wonderful. And quite frankly, I wish I would have had him when we were seniors. But
yeah.
Oh, heck well, yeah.
He liked you guys too.
I believe one of the things that those guys had that we kind of carried over into the next year, you know, a lot of those guys, they were good friends and they're still good friends to this day. And then when we became seniors, we just took it to the next level. Yeah. And here we are again. I mean, it's like these guys, I may not talk to them for a couple of months, but I pick up the phone and it's like I just talked to him like last week. And it's just that brotherhood and togetherness was really, really, really unique for us.
Yep.
Okay. Talk about 1975. If you're still in the preseason, Texas football had the Indians picked number one in the state. They returned 3 offensive, 6 defensive starters, 21 Lettermen off a 11-3 state semifinalist. In addition, a crop of senior players who went undefeated as sophomores and JV. The quarterback for 1975 was junior Richie Etheridge. What was Richie like as a quarterback?
With the lug?
Yeah, he was bigger than most of the offensive linemen. Hey,
yeah, he was. He's one of the biggest guys on the team. We called him the lug.
He's a great friend of all of us. You know, Richie was a lot like his daddy. He wasn't a rah-rah guy in the huddle. He didn't say a whole lot extra other than calling the play. But I think we all respected Richie. Richie was strong, too, when we joke about his size. He was bigger than several of the offensive linemen. And when he took off running, he was a load to bring down, but he also had a really good arm. But
yeah, he had a strong arm.
Yeah, he did. We all had a lot of faith in him. Again, he wasn't one of those guys that talked a whole lot about, you know, himself or anything. He's still that way. We still get together a lot with him. But no, great guy. He really was good. I mean, went on Texas Tech scholarship. So there was obviously some talent there.
He also was our kickoff guy.
Yeah.
And I remember that those were the days you could tie your shoe up and yeah. All that. And he'd get all garbed up and tie his shoe up. And he could kick the football. You know, he didn't do the extra points for us, but he definitely did the kickoffs for us. And he would always boom it deep.
I tell you what, he threw a damn good ball. He had a tight spiral on it, man. And so easy to catch. But, yeah, he had a great arm.
Competitor. He was a competitor.
And very smart. You wouldn't know it talking to him, but.
but so, Gary, you've taken off on Collazo, and now you've taken off on Richie.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. But anyway, no, I think he was really smart. That helped him as a quarterback.
Okay. Pre-district games in 1975. I'm just going to call them off. The Indians had wins against Pasadena Dobie, 21-7, Spring Branch, 14-7, Beaumont Charlton Pollard, 27-0, Beaumont French, 42-0, Beaumont Forest Park, 14-6, had a loss in week number 3 to South Houston, 17-16, at Memorial Stadium in Pasadena. What do you remember about those pre-district games of 1975?
You know, I'll mention that South Houston game, that loss. I think it was good for us because I think,
yeah,
you know, it was our third game of the year, as you mentioned, and we were kind of filling our oats a little bit. A lot of people don't remember this, but we had 2 defensive starters that were still out. Mike Gibler, our defensive end, one of our defensive ends, he had had knee surgery coming off spring, and he was still out. And then Ricky Simpson, who was the other inside linebacker with me, had a heart surgery. And I think late July, early part of August, and he was still out. And so we literally were starting on defense, you know, 2 guys that weren't, you know, our first string starters. And so I think they barely squeaked by us. If I remember correctly, we scored a late touchdown. But I think that game helped us kind of get back to the basics and get more focused and get more grounded. It kind of brought us back. And, you know, yeah. I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit, but it kind of set the tone for when we had an opportunity to play them again in the playoffs. We were really primed to play them again the second time in the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing Wilson said, that we, not only Ricky Simpson and Mike, they started when they were sophomores. So you're losing 3-year starters here, right?
Right.
Plus, what Wilson hasn't said is that he was, at that time, stage of a season, he was going both ways. So he was playing halfback as well. And by the time we got to the late third, fourth quarter, he was so tired, he could barely even call the plays in the huddle. And so, yeah, we were not at full strength for sure.
So you're saying Wilson wasn't in good condition?
Well, by the time the fourth quarter rolled out, going both ways,
I was a first half guy.
Your motor was always running, Wilson. I remember that. Now he was ready to go. Maybe he ran out of gas. That's because he gave it all ahead.
Well, we were not at full strength, that's for sure. And in the fourth quarter, I remember that. That was one drive where they kept the ball and we couldn't get it back to our offense. It was the one time I felt all year long is that the defense sort of couldn't hold. Felt a little bit like it was, we let them run on us when we otherwise should have been able to stop. And I think that was part and parcel. So we were not at full strength that game. For sure.
Yeah. And y'all did have a good defense. That's for dang sure.
I think 90% of their plays came to my side that game. I've never been so tired in my life.
Well, that's a good point. Sorry to interrupt you, Gary, but I had Dougal McDougal was the outside linebacker. And of course, if anybody knows Dougal, he's the strongest guy on the football team. Mike was the other defensive end. And Don Daspic, great football player. But boy, it's a big difference between Don and size and Mike Giblin. So they manned three or four plays in the first quarter to the left-hand side. And then everything else after that was on the other side of the field against where Gary and, you know, Don Daspic was playing. And they just wore him down the whole game.
And our other inside linebacker, our second string inside linebacker, was on that side of the field too.
Oh, yes.
Good point, Wilson.
It was a head-on collision every play for me.
Yeah.
You know, they had a good team. Oh. They were talkers. You know?
Yeah,
they had the old junkyard dog deal. And, you know, and we'll talk about the playoff game. But, yeah, they were rather mouthy.
Weren't they ranked at the
time,
Carl?
Oh, they started out. They were ranked real high. I think third. Well, and they had Wes Hubert, who played center and defensive tackle for him, played with Wilson at UT, the starter. So they had some good players. It was
they had a big old fullback, too, if you remember.
They did. They were strong. They really had a good team. They did.
Yeah. Well, you enter district, you're 5-1, and the Indians went through district 22-4A undefeated. And I just want to touch on the games. If you have any comment about any of the games, they're all interesting. You can't talk about P&G without talking about playing TJ and Needland. And then, of course, that was a big win against Lincoln. And the Vider game, I thought, just from reading, that was an interesting game too. But you start district week number 7 playing Vider. We come out on top 28-22. This happened to be Coach Ronnie Thompson's first year at Vider. It was a close game. What do you remember about that district opener?
Well, the thing I remember is when we played in our junior year, my memory's not what it used to be, but I believe at the time, our junior year, they had one of the longest losing streaks in the state.
They did.
They were not good. I remember lining up and looking at them and thinking, geez, they just were not coached well. You know, they just weren't a good football team. Well, Thompson shows up, and I was amazed in 1 year. He was able to turn that team around. And there were some guys on that Vider team and Vic May coached at P&G for a long time. But they gave us a good game. They really did.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I remember the Vider game. I got burnt in the end zone. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
I remember that I got a hip pointer that game.
Oh, yeah, you
did. So Mr. Finley had to ice me down that following week, and I didn't play against TJ.
Yeah, Wilson and I both got injured that week, and he and I couldn't play the following week. That's right.
I didn't get to play against Vider because I got hurt against French.
Man, y'all were a bunch of wussies.
Before. Boy, no kidding.
Man, I didn't remember y'all being like that.
Yeah. Hey, I tell you what, though, Carl, I was looking good. I was walking the sidelines in a blue leisure suit.
You still wear that blue leisure suit.
With the wingtip collars.
Hey, on the Vider game, didn't we have a 28-0 lead at one time?
Yeah, well, I do remember pulling the starters at the beginning of the fourth quarter and sitting down drinking the juice and getting full of that stuff. And then when the game got close, they had to bring the starters back out there.
Yeah, and they scored on us.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, their quarterback was Charlie Boehm, who played at Lamar. And had Joey Pino. He was highly recruited.
Oh, they had some good players.
Yeah, they did. And like I say, I think coaching had a lot to do with it. He really turned it around in 1 year.
the offense they came out with, the shotgun, no one had ever seen that before.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. That was Ronnie Thompson, yep.
Well, the next week is week number 8. We play TJ. We beat TJ 30-12. Mm-hmm. TJ was 0-7 going into the game. TJ's offensive stats, negative 3-yard rushing, 5 yards passing, and 2 total yards.
So you were saying they were an offensive juggernaut.
Yeah, there you go. But for our listeners, what was the rivalry like then between P&G and TJ in those days? What do y'all remember about that game?
I remember it was pouring down, raining.
Yeah, it was raining the whole
time. Me and Carl had a contest to see who could get the muddiest throwing downfield.
Hopefully it wasn't the back of my jersey. Yeah. When I get knocked down.
And I tell you something, Gary Davis, we were up. So Gary Davis got to come in and quarterback. And we were driving. And I'm telling you, there's water standing on this field. So we're on about the 10-yard line. And we ran 3-19. He wanted me to run an out route. So I ran an out route, and I'm wide open. He throws me the ball. I stick my hands up, and it goes right through my hand. It hit me in the face mask, and I dropped the damn thing. And he was so mad at me because that would have been his only touchdown of the year.
And, Brad, that's hands you're talking about.
But you remember, it was who could get the muddiest, so he was muddy, okay? That's the only reason he dropped it.
Yeah.
He was focused on other things.
Throwing poor Gary Davis under the bus, too. You know, Gary's a poor man. You better watch it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, anyway, he was really mad at me. Well, by the way, Carl, that's the only ball I missed all year. So.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We'll get into that a little later, right, guys?
Well, yeah. You talk about the rivalry, you know, and now it's P&G Nederland. I mean, you guys know as well as we do. Back then, really, it was more P&G TJ. And I ran around with a lot of their players. Didn't really do that with the Nederland guys for whatever reason. But TJ and P&G in the 70s, it was just depending on what year, who was going to win. It was always really competitive. And I'll just go ahead and say it wasn't that way with Nederland in the 70s so much. So it was a way bigger deal, TJ P&G rivalry, than Nederland P&G at that time. And Lincoln, too. Yeah.
Lincoln was number one.
And I still think they carried a little chip on their shoulder because Coach Ethers came from TJ to Port Nations.
Yeah, yes. They were still angry about it.
Oh, they were 0-10 our senior year, so it says 0-7 here. They didn't win their last three either. And like I say, Judge Brannick was on that team, and you know, we talk about it a lot. But yeah, definitely the bigger rivalries with the Port Arthur schools than it was with Nederland.
Yep.
Hey Carl, wasn't Bruno the quarterback?
Well, Sean Walker.
Oh, Sean Walker.
He got hurt, and then Bruno came in and he got hurt. And they actually brought in Tim Hammond. Tim, I talked to Tim a lot. Tim was a sophomore. He tells me that when Walker got hurt, they brought him up to suit up for varsity. And he tell, you know, if you know Tim, he's a good storyteller. He was over there talking to the cheerleaders during the game. And, well, Bruno gets hurt, and they start yelling for Hammond. And he's like, what? And they're like, get out there. He's like, get out where? Get out on the field. He said, I ran out there. He said, I got in the huddle and tried to call a play, but I think I was crying. He actually scored on us, though. So, but, yeah, he's a funny guy. But, yeah, we ran around with a lot of those guys, but they had a rough year that year.
Well, week number 9, it's versus Lincoln. And P&G had lost to Lincoln 4 years in a row. And P&G beat Lincoln 29-0. And Coach Etheridge said in the newspapers at that time, quote, this has to be the greatest effort put forth by any team I've ever been associated with. I never dreamed we would win like this. And that would end the quote. What was the rivalry like between P&G and Lincoln in those days? And what do you remember about that game?
You know, Buck, this is Wilson. I will tell you, and a lot of people probably don't even know this, but, you know, in the previous years, as John mentioned, Lincoln had been P&G's nemesis. And we were so focused and determined that we were going to try to win it at all costs. And I remember their quarterback for Lincoln ran out of the pocket, and he started sprinting to try to get upfield. And Ricky Simpson, our inside linebacker, hit their quarterback, and the guy literally did a 360 in the air. And landed on his back. I'll always remember that bounty.
Yeah, they had Leroy Leopold was their offensive guard, and the play that the defensive end had what they call pick a hole or something like it.
Pick a hole.
That's what made Joe Washington All-American, right? He'd go run down the 2-hole, 4-hole, 6-hole. Well, they'd pull the guard and they'd kick the defensive end out and he'd cut up for the 4-hole. Or if you crashed in, they'd bounce out and hit it on the outside. It's basically, pick a hole.
Yeah.
Well, my job was to stand there at the line of scrimmage and have Leroy Leopold come running down. And I'm supposed to hit him and knock him back into the line, to stand my ground. And then if Weldon Cartwright, who won the district championship as a junior in the 100-yard dash, beat him to the sidelines. So that was the plays that we had to sort of stop against Lincoln. Fortunately, they didn't spring a big play on us that week. But I remember they had some talented players that year, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Leroy Leopold, wasn't he the Notre Dame great later on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Played for San Francisco. And he actually, probably one of the best hits I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Also played middle linebacker. Blake Green, who was all of about 155 pounds or 150 pounds, was sprinting around the edge, and Leopold hit him so hard it looked like a rag doll. And Blake just—he literally went straight back on his head. And I remember he had a concussion. And of course, in those days, concussions—they just kind of tape you up and put you back out there. Well, they brought Blake on the bench and sat him up, propped him up somehow, and he literally was there the whole game, just kind of in a complete days. But that was one of the hardest hits I've ever seen in my life.
We went to the schooner to eat, and he was still out of it. And being the nice guys we were, we started eating the stuff off his plate, shrimp and stuff. But he had no idea where he was.
No.
I tell you what, Wilson, I had thrown downfield and turned and looked, and I seen Leopold was parallel to the ground.
Yeah.
And he hit Blake in the left ear hole, and whenever Blake hit the ground, his hands went by his side and his head went back and he was laying there. I thought he was in a coma, man.
Yep. I thought he was dead. I thought he was dead, literally.
I did too. I swear I did.
Yeah. It was the most vicious hit I've ever seen.
Yeah, me too.
Us beating, I could have sworn it was more than 4 years that we lost it to Lincoln.
Yeah, it was 70 was the last time they had won.
Well, it felt longer.
Yeah, it did. You're right.
These guys, they were our nemesis, like Wilson said. They were the reason for keeping us out of the playoffs. How many years? You can only imagine. Except, last year when we, quote, lucked out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so when the celebration in the field house after we won that game, it was the most unbridled joy throughout the entire field house, even more than the state game. And the state game, the reason I back off of this, because we knew, kind of what Carl was saying earlier, once we took our uniform off, that was it. So it was a bittersweet feeling. But once we beat Lincoln, it felt like, the boulder was off. We had finally done it. It was the happiest, I think, me and the rest of the group of guys I've ever seen, to be honest with you.
Okay, let's go to week 10 versus Nederland. We won the game 28-6. Carl explained a lot about the rivalry just a few minutes ago. So what was that like? But especially that game. What do you remember about that game with Nederland?
I remember they weren't near as good that year as they were the year before.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
When they had Don Clayton at quarterback.
Yep. Yeah.
Gilchrist.
Yeah.
The only game that I felt, because of the controversy of the year before with Aguilar catching the end zone, it was at Nederland, and they brought in referees from Louisiana. And you can ask Ricky Simpson, because there was some obvious, blatant holds on me, on Ricky. Well, I think the referees were paid off, to be honest with you. No, literally. I remember one time the play was to the other side, and Ricky stopped, and he was walking, and he was talking to the ref. So I slowed down. I stopped walking. The play's over. Well, no, Ricky's screaming at the play's still going. He's screaming, that guy's holding me, ref. That guy's holding me. And yeah, so it was an interesting game. Now, refs couldn't overcome the lack of talent on their side, but that was what I remember about that game.
I tell you, I don't remember seeing Ricky Simpson. I mean, he got mad in his day, but he was pissed about that game.
Yeah, we had to reel him in so he wouldn't get thrown out.
Mm. Was that a home game?
No.
No,
so they could pick the referees.
I tell you what, That first drive, I think we ran the ball every play. We were throwing downfield. And I'll never forget, it was so humid that night. I tell you what, that's the tiredest I've ever been on a football field was that first drive. I mean, of course, I don't know. I think Buck scored on the first drive, I believe.
I got to compliment our offensive line. I mean, these guys were understated heroes of the team, to be honest with you. I remember watching the very first drive that Anthony Garcia, they ran a play, get to the fullback, and he was going to hit the line of scrimmage. The offensive line had pushed the defensive line of Neyland so far back, it was like 5 yards down the field, that Anthony almost tripped and fell down because where he thought the line was going to be, there was nobody there. Literally, that's how far off the line the offensive line had moved Neyland.
Mm. Okay.
Thanks, Kirk. I wish you'd have said that earlier, but thanks. You had to wait a while.
I can remember watching from the sideline and thinking when Anthony went into the line that they stopped us for no gain, and then I'd look up and see 2nd and 5, and I'm like, God.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It looked like he was getting stopped right at the line that we were making 5 yards.
Yep.
Okay. Hey, the win against Neyland gave PNG its 2nd district title in a row. Going to start the playoff run of 1975 by district versus Beaumont French. This was played at Port Arthur Memorial Stadium. It was billed, and it was a rematch of week 5 when PNG beat French 42-0. And the Indians ended up, at the end of the game, beating French 6-2, and French led 2-0 at halftime.
What do y'all remember about that game?
They came out much better than the first game. They were ready for us.
They came out ready to play.
Yeah, they were ready for us.
You know, I remember, I mean, really, it seemed like our offense just couldn't get it going. We would kind of get going and then get thrown back and so forth. And them scoring, you know, the 2 points on a safety, that was very unusual, obviously. But it just was, I think we might have been looking ahead a little bit, but, you know, that's just kind of my thought.
Well, at the time, I didn't think we were, because the coaches, that's all they talked about all week, was forget about the first game. And as a 17-year-old kid, I thought I was. But as we got into the game, you know, I remember at halftime thinking, geez, this is absolutely horrible. And I think whether we knew it or not, we were a little complacent because of how easily the first game went. But yeah, at halftime, it was not a happy locker room. We never panicked, but I remember thinking, man, we played horrible. They say every good team's got to win a few games ugly, and we definitely won that one ugly.
That might have been our ugliest game of the year, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Our offense was so sluggish, so off the wall, it was bad.
I think you're right. We probably weren't ready to play. The only other thing I remember about that game is Joe Fro was so nervous on the sideline. You know, I finally had to tell him to go sit down on the bench here. You're driving me nuts here.
You told me to get away from you. That's what you told me.
Yeah.
Get away from me. I was going crazy. I couldn't stand it. And I drove Kirk crazy.
Yeah.
Joe Fro, you were always nervous.
Oh, man. I stayed that way. My hands are sweating right now. I feel like I'm about to get on an airplane.
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all remember, but late in the game, their tailback's name was Terry Medford. He was their best offensive player. Well, they friggin' threw a pass to him. I don't remember who he was behind in the secondary, but it went right through Medford's hands and it for a touchdown. I mean, and it was just luck. I mean, you know, and
yeah, you got to have a luck.
You do.
Yeah.
And that could have been it right there. I mean,
yeah.
To think about it now, wow, that would have been horrible. But
yeah,
he dropped the ball.
The other thing I remember about that week was I got handed the baton to give a speech at the pep rally.
Did you talk about Lewis and Clark?
Oh,
yeah,
so Wilson.
You're the one that jinxed
Wilson. Oh my God! It was my speech that fired us up. My goodness!
Really?
I mean,
I don't remember.
Well,
It was inspirational.
Well, the coaches at halftime, they were probably, don't let Jofro say a thing, you know? But yeah, that was a nerve-wracking week for me just because of that.
Okay.
Having the first words out of a microphone ever.
Go ahead, Gary. Tell us what the speech was.
Oh, I can remember it word for word simply because
really?
I...
Man.
He has it tattooed on his arm.
Wilson, I said it 10,000 times that week before I gave it so I wouldn't mess up. At the beginning of the year, we set a goal, and that was to win a district championship. Oh, everybody cheered. And I said, we've accomplished that goal. So now we've set a new goal, and that goal is to win a state championship. Everybody stands up and cheers. But we can't do that unless we win tonight. So y'all come out, support us, and we'll bring home a victory. There it is.
There you go.
Oh, must have worked,
because well, that's definitely verbatim. Right, I can tell you that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It was standing
up. I'm clapping.
Oh, yeah. Man. Hey, I
want to go hit somebody.
I did show up.
True poetry.
If you need a speechwriter, Judge, you know who to go to. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I don't know why he was nervous. He's been a good storyteller this whole podcast, man.
Well. The 6-2 victory was what I got out of that.
Didn't motivate us too much.
Oh, well, that's a W.
Yeah.
All right. So the Indians advance to the regional versus South Houston. And it was played at Pasadena Memorial Stadium. It was a rematch of week number 3 when South Houston beat PNG 17-16. And according to my notes here, South Houston was undefeated and ranked number 3 in the state at that time. And PNG won that game 32-7, and the defense forced 6 turnovers.
There you go. Come on, Wilson. What do you remember about that game?
Well, you know, I mean, going back to what I said earlier, we had our 2 starters back. We had, you know, Mike Giblin and we had Ricky Simpson back.
Okay.
And they had been playing. So, you know, that helped a lot. That helped bolster our defense right there.
And you weren't going both ways at that time either, too. So.
Yeah, that helped a lot. And then one thing I do remember about that game is Randy Johnson, who was defensive halfback like Jack was, intercepted at least 1 pass. He might have intercepted a couple. But he got up and he spiked the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
You know, which you didn't do in those days, obviously. It was immediate 15-yard penalty. Well, Coach Troy was waiting for him on the sideline and grabbed him by the face mask. And it pulled him off the field. And, you know, instead of celebrating, obviously, he got a pretty good chewing out.
Yeah.
But I do remember that, you know. So the 6 turnovers, I'd kind of forgotten it. We'd gotten 6 turnovers that game.
AB on JC, Carl.
Yeah. Yeah, their quarterback played both ways. He played safety and quarterback. He was a bit of a talker.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was a talker.
They would talk to us before the game. They were hollering across the field when we were warming up both games.
But we were so focused and ready for them. I mean, it was
They carried spare tires out on the field with them before the game and all that stuff.
Junkyard dog.
Yeah.
Jack, did you have an interception? I mean, for 6 turnovers, obviously, there had to be a couple fumbles. And
Randy had 2 interceptions because the second time he intercepted after he had gotten all the stuff with Coach Troy the first time, he intercepted it and he got off the ground and held the ball up in the air. And I'm thinking, this idiot spikes it again.
He just asked him.
We may witness a murder right here. and he didn't spike it. He handed it to the ref. Luckily, he might not have been around to play the next game. But yeah, he still has the record for interceptions for PNG in the season. He had 14.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, he was a ball hawk. And, you know, Jack, you might have had interception that game. I'm not sure who all had interception, but for us to have 6 turnovers, there obviously were.
Wilson, I think you had a fumble recovery, what I remember.
Yeah. Hey, that was a good football team y'all played.
Yeah,
that was
they were.
Y'all are playing good teams now.
And plus, you know, coming off of that 6-2 nail biter, kind of put the fear of God in us. We realized, okay, we got
to. And we'd lost earlier to them.
Yeah.
That helped.
Revenge, exactly.
Then we had to go right back to their stadium again.
Right.
Hey, they had a picture of their lineup on the wall in the field house. And I don't know who it was, but I think it was Wilson that put an oyster on Jeff Corley's head.
Hey, gum, Wilson.
I don't know. It was just one of those moments, I guess. Yeah. One of those rare times I did something like that.
It stayed up there the whole week.
Brad, you know, they had us blocked downfield, you know, every play of the opposite side. And we always called it getting parallel to the ground or get AB. So our goal was to try to put Corley out. You know, he played safety. And we throwed at him all freaking game. And I think that's what kind of shook him up a little bit on the other side of the ball.
I remember he was hopping around the whole game.
Yeah. It was fun.
Hopping is limping or?
He would just hop because they were coming at him. I mean, they were coming at him from different directions.
Yeah.
He was like more focused on looking for who was coming at him than, you know, playing the ball and so forth. So
yeah, his name was Jeff Corley, and we called him AB on JC all week.
I think he went to LSU.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did. I just remembered a Coach Troy story from the game. I don't even know how it started, but I had this hat that said Coca-Cola on it. And after every game, I'd put this hat on. Well, it got to be – and Jack will tell you, playing baseball with him, for him, he's very superstitious. So
yeah, he was. Yeah.
For some reason, this hat, you know, after every game, he'd come over there and make sure I was wearing the hat. And I remember one game, I forgot it. And he walks over to me before the game and said, "Where's your hat?" And I'm like, "I think I left it at home." He's like, "Oh, no." He said, "Call either your parents or your girlfriend, Lisa, my wife, and make her bring it to the field house." So I did that. They brought it, the hat, and he was happy. Well, we were walking around on the field before the game of the South Houston game, and I was walking around, and I see a white Frisbee. I pick it up, and it had a Coca-Cola emblem on it. And so I picked it up, and I walked over to Coach Troy, and I'm like, "Look what I just found." I kind of made a joke. He didn't think it was funny. He's like, "Do not lose that thing. Go put it in your locker right now. I don't want to see you playing with it." And I was like, "Geez, okay, Coach." So after the game, he came over and asked me where I had my hat on. He asked me where the Frisbee was, and I had the Frisbee the rest of the year. He made me do that as well. But yeah, he was a very superstitious guy.
Yeah, that's a good story.
I tell you what, it wore off on me because I wore the same clothes every out of town game.
Yeah, we smelt you.
Yeah. Yeah, Washington would have been good.
Matter of fact, I think I wore the same underwear.
Oh my gosh. Too much information.
What I remember about the game towards the end is that we put a whooping on them. And actually, our second team offense was in the game towards the end. I think they actually scored a touchdown.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
You win that game, big win. It sends the Indians to the quarterfinals, playing Houston Cashmere, played in the Astrodome, and the Rams quarterback, Terrence Grant. Cashmere had romped through the playoffs. Their defensive line averaged from 215 to 265. P&G's offensive line averaged 187.
That's being kind.
Yeah.
I was reading this in preparation for the podcast. Coach Etheridge lost a coin flip for the site to play the game that he had wanted to play at Cardinal Stadium. And other notes, Gilbert caught a big TD pass right before the half to pull P&G to 13-7 at halftime. And the Indians had two fourth-quarter touchdowns, a fourth-quarter recovered fumble, had an interception, and a blocked punt. P&G won that game 27-19. What do you remember about that game?
I remember, I think, in the fourth quarter, it was third and long, like third and 19.
Yep.
And Richie goes back to pass. And as Carl said earlier, Richie was not a fast guy, but he was a strong runner. He took off and ran right up the middle, and he literally fell across the 19 yards needed to get the first down to keep that drive going. So that I remember that. And they were a very talented team, and they threw a lot.
Yeah.
But they did a lot of swing passes. They had speed and size and, you know, everything. They were a tough team to play.
What I remember about it was their speed. I was chasing the guy all over the place, like three steps behind him the whole time. And then I think the first half, Gary, you might remember, Wilson, you might remember this. Weren't we just running man the whole time, the first half, and then we came out and switched back to a zone defense? Because I know things got easier the second half from my perspective.
Well, the coaches made a defensive change. Instead of on the strong side, the outside linebacker would be inside eye of the tight end.
Okay.
They moved the defensive end to that position and let our linebackers get back into the flats.
Yeah.
So we didn't have to make contact with the tight end and then get back in our pass zones. When we read pass, we were already there. I think that helped.
Yeah.
Because it gave us two more defensive backs, mainly. Me and Dougal ended up being defensive backs.
Right. There was a lot of sandlot football going on.
Yeah.
Terrence Grant, you chase him. You know, they call it, you know, off-schedule plays. When he'd run around, and our guys were on him for the first read, then they'd break off and just play sandlot football. And that's where they made a lot of their yardage. It worked for them.
I remember thinking I wasn't very good early on in the game trying to block this one guy. And I was used to people being bigger than me. And not that I was fast, but, you know, we relied on quickness. This guy was probably 70 pounds bigger than me and a lot quicker than me. And I remember thinking, maybe you're not as good as you thought you were. Well, long story short, the guy's name was Jacob Green, who ended up being an All-American at A&M and played 13 years in the NFL and 10th player chosen in the NFL draft. So here I am, you know, 175 pounds.
He was on the Ring of Honor in the Seattle Seahawks, a
pretty special guy. But at the time, I remember Coach Troy chewing me out, and I'm like, Coach, I'm trying pretty hard. the guy's just really good.
Yeah.
But they physically, we were way undersized, and he was probably 245, and then they had a tackle that weighed, like you said, 265, and I was 175 pounds. So, but that one play that Wilson mentioned, I remember that. Bailed us out. That kept the momentum going. That was a giant play. Andy's catch before half, because we were down 13-0 before I even knew what happened. Really?
Oh yes.
That was giant. That was, big, real big.
Well, you got to take a little credit here. Jeff Cooley breaks through the line, hits the quarterback, fumbles the ball. I jump on the fumble and at the turnover, and that's when Andy got his touchdown right before halftime.
Andy, speak to that big catch, man.
Well, it was a little curling go. Supposed to run 5 yards, turn around, and Richie pumps it, and I just keep turning and running to the flag. He come flying up. Well, I saw him come flying up. I said, we just got to get the ball. And Richie threw it. It was perfect. And then I went to the ground. He come on top of me, and, man, he hit me so hard. I got up. I was sucking wind. But another thing I remember, Buck, was that in the fourth quarter, I had about a 40-yard touchdown pass that I caught. And I don't know if y'all remember, but they called it back.
Yeah, I remember.
Because they said I ran out of bounds on my route. And I don't think I did, but they said I did. And I was pretty glad because I outran that guy to the goal line.
Yeah.
The whole year, we were prepared so well.
Yeah.
Our second-string players were the offense that we were going to face. And they did such a great job preparing us. We would see what the other teams were running. That game, I remember thinking, I've never seen this before. Well, I had. I just hadn't seen it that fast.
Yeah, they were fast.
That was the difference.
They were fast. They were big and fast.
Yes.
I remember our fans. And I remember talking to the family and friends after the game. They were all nervous that this was somehow going to be, the end of us. And everybody asked, well, what did Coach say to y'all at halftime? Of course, we always were very confident. We always thought we were going to win the football game. But I do remember the halftime talk from Coach Etheridge. Very calm, very cool. He said, guys, he says, they didn't make any big scheme changes or anything like that. He said, keep doing what you're doing. You just got to do it a little bit quicker. You need to get there just a little bit faster. You can get there, but you same place. You got to just be a little bit quicker. I think that's what Gary was telling you when they flipped between the defensive end and the outside linebacker. He said, and this is the only time he ever mentioned it the entire year. He says, by the time it gets to the fourth quarter, he said, you're in much better shape than these guys. You're going to wear them down. And because you're in better shape, we're going to win the game in the fourth quarter. So that was the only time he ever mentioned us the fact that we were in much better shape than, and we were typically in much better shape than any other team we played. And that's exactly how the game played out in the second half.
Okay. Well, the win against Kashmir, the Indians advance. You're looking at the semifinals now against undefeated 13-0 San Antonio Lee, played at the Astrodome. Indians go on to win that game 28-0. San Antonio Lee had averaged 32.6 points a game. Their quarterback, Jay Luncheon, and their district MVP running back was Mike Stone. At the time, a crowd was a then Astrodome record of 28,268. Junior safety Jackie Havard had three interceptions in the first half. Two were at the P&G 4-yard line and in the end zone. And the third interception set up a 62-yard bomb to Andy Gilbert with 28 seconds left in the half to give P&G a 14-0 lead. And P&G's defense had five interceptions in the game.
What do you guys remember about that big game?
That was a lot of fun.
I tell you what, we were hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, we were.
In that game, I guarantee you.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. That Kashmir game woke us up.
Confidence. The confidence level was really high. I had a lot of confidence after the Kashmir game.
Yeah.
I don't think they were a very good team, actually.
No, they weren't. They weren't.
They were not very big. Compared to Kashmir, they were like night and day. I'm not taking anything away from them. Obviously, they were a good team. But after me trying to block Jacob Green and then going the next week, and I mean, I was looking at the program I found the other day and at their weight, and they were littler than we were. They really were. Mm-hmm.
They were.
Yeah, and actually, I think it was our easiest game in the playoffs. Don't y'all think it was our easiest game in the playoffs?
Yeah, without a
doubt. No, yeah.
Hey, Gary, tell them your story, Gary.
Yeah.
Because I got an add on after your story.
Okay. Well, I think it was somewhere in the fourth quarter. Can't remember exactly when. They had the ball. You know, they were deep in their own territory. And earlier in the game, they had thrown an out route to my side. And I jumped up and got a hand on the ball. But I think the guy still caught it. I tipped it, but he fluttered to him and he caught it. So I was in our huddle and I was looking at their huddle. And I saw their quarterback look at the wide receiver. And when they came out into the formation, I recognized it as the same formation as that play earlier. So as an outside linebacker, my position was 3 yards back and 3 yards to the sideline. That's where I started off. Well, I cheated and took 4 steps to the sideline thinking that they were going to run that same play. And they did. And I was in their kitchen. When he threw the ball, I was right there, caught it. I think it was about between 15 and 20 yards to the end zone. And I think I sprinted that in about 4 seconds. It was blazing to watch on film. I thought I'd never get there.
Well, good job. I feel I like the way you describe it. Yeah.
You had a heck of a headwind, though, Gary.
Yeah. But, you know, it was funny watching the film. I didn't even remember it. The guy hit me at the end zone. He knocked the crap out of me, man. I went flying. And I don't even remember feeling that. I was so pumped up with adrenaline. I didn't feel a thing. Well, I'm so excited. Giblin's in my face, screaming, holding my face mask. I'm so excited. I run right by Vaughn, who's coming out there to congratulate me. He was like waiting for me to hug him or something. I just ran right by him. And who's next to me? Kirk. Yeah. He's following me off the field. Now, I'll let you tell the rest of it.
So we're all excited, you know, Mike and me and Gary. Well, to back up a little bit, for whatever reason, I have no idea why the coaches did this, but I snapped on extra point teams. Okay. Ty Becker snapped for punts, but why they couldn't leave him in to do extra points, I have no idea. But anyway, so I'm on the extra point team. So we're all hugging Jerry where he's running off the field and we're on the sidelines. They're ready to get extra point. And some coaches start saying, extra point team, extra point team. So me being a senior leader, I want to stand up. I got my helmet on. I'm running up and down the sideline, extra point team, extra point team. Gary looked at me and said, Kirk, you're on the extra point team. So I had to put my helmet and put back on the back. So I think they had to call a timeout, okay, literally. So I run out there and anyway, so I was embarrassed.
Yeah.
You know, you can get away with 10 players, but you can't get away with a guy doing the snap football, okay? So anyway, that's Gary's touchdown story.
No, not without a center.
I tell him about not being on the extra point. Anyway.
No, that was great.
I can only imagine, too. And as Buck said, it was 28,000 plus, and most of them were Indian fans. It had to be loud and just invigorating. Gary, when you caught that ball and took it in, that gives me chills just thinking about it.
That's a defensive player's dream.
Yeah, really. Sure is.
I OD'd on adrenaline, man. I tell you, it was something.
Well, it sounded like your teammates did, too, Giblin.
Yeah, they did.
Tell you what, after that touchdown before half right there, across the end zone line, and I turned around and looked, and Von Robinson, the offensive lineman, biggest guy, was the first one down there to me to congratulate me.
You know, y'all mentioned his name several times, and I know my brother Matt spoke highly of that dude. He said that was one strong cat now.
Oh, yeah.
He said you bang up against Von, and it's like hitting a tree. He really respected the heck out of him, and he was younger than Matt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was our best offensive lineman by far. And he went to Lamar, and Matt, you know, it started as a freshman. And Von shows up, and Matt tells the story. He goes, I know Von, but I'm going to show him right off the bat, put him in his place. And Matt said, I come off the ball, and Von just unloaded on him. And Matt will tell you to this day, so I've never felt an offensive lineman hit me like he did in that.
I've heard him say that.
Yeah. Von was really
I think he was our biggest offensive lineman, too, wasn't he, Carl?
Yeah, he was.
And how big was that? Yeah. How large was he? Was he 200?
210, maybe.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah. And he was one of those guys, you know, lifting weights. You watch him lift weights, and you think, he ain't that strong. But, you know, like, do something, like, wrestle with him or tug-of-war, stuff like that. He was just a strong dude, man. He really was. Yeah. One of our closest friends to this day.
Good guy.
Great guy. Absolutely, yes.
He's a good athlete. He could have played tight end if Aguilar would have been our tight end. He was that good.
And he tells a story. He was like me in junior high. We both got cut in junior high because we were small and, you know, not very talented. And, you know, we were told to go buy a flute or something and join the band or whatever. Yeah. But Von, he was a heck of a football player. He was.
Okay, the win against San Antonio Lee puts you into the finals against Odessa Permian. And I do have a memory of myself as we lead into this Odessa Permian game. I was at that San Antonio Lee game in the Astrodome. And, you know, in those days, we didn't have cell phones. I didn't have any way to get information. And it was sort of fun as a spectator following the Indians in that playoff run. Who are we going to play if we win? You know, looking at that. And we could see that we were going to beat San Antonio Lee. You know, we ended up beating them 28-0. And it was getting late in the game. And I was wondering, who are we going to play? And then late in the game, you know, the scoreboard, they'd have information that, you know, if you scored a touchdown, they'd have the Cowboys shooting guns and everything. But they put it says, Odessa Permian beat Longview 10-9 on a 62-yard field goal by Russell Wheatley. And I was a football fan enough to know that at that time, to the best of my knowledge, the pro record for distance at a field goal was 63 yards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was thinking, hey, this kid kicked a 62-yard field goal to win the game. And that means if they're inside the 50-yard line, they could score points. And it freaked me out. I didn't realize in a high school seeing something like that, but it did match up against Odessa Permian. They were 12-1-1. It was going to be played at Texas Stadium in Irving. It was Odessa Permian's fifth trip to the finals in the previous 10 years. They had a little saying that was all over the newspapers that they had a mojo going for them. They did beat Longview 10-9 in the semifinals. Their defense, led by defensive tackle Kevin Steen, safety Mike Woodard. And Brad, you had a question there.
And we were talking about this in the days before the game at PNG. You know, there were parades and pep rally, and I heard 39 chartered buses The team left for Texas Stadium on a Friday morning. What do you guys remember about being in Port Neches before the big game?
Well, I tell you, we had to battle Coach Troy because he wanted to bring Bus 61. Y'all remember that?
Yeah.
He did not want to ride that charter bus. He was so superstitious. He wanted to bring 61.
Yeah.
But that morning when we left, it was just unbelievable around that field house.
Yeah.
I mean, there were so many people there, man. So many people.
You remember on the way up there, the bus broke down.
Yeah. One of the buses broke down.
Oh, really? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Yes, well, I remember containing that. The football players, band, NS, or what?
We had two buses, and I think we broke down in Waxahachie, maybe. But I know we did break down. We ended up piling on the other bus, right?
Yeah. And we got there late to the stadium because we were practicing at Texas Stadium, right? So we got there late, and one of the security guards didn't know what to do because they weren't expecting us. We needed a dressing room. So they accidentally let us into the Dallas Cowboys. There's three dressing rooms in the stadium. There's the visitors, there's the Dallas Cowboys, and then there's the home team dressing room that's not the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Well, the guy let us into the wrong dressing room. He let us into the Dallas Cowboys dressing room for the practices. Well, we were so excited. There's Roger Staubach, and there's all these people. We were going in erasing their names and putting our names over their lockers. Yeah. You know. Oh. Apparently, he got in bad trouble after that. But anyway, that was I remember that was a thrill. Yeah.
I was next to Kyle. Kyle dressed in Billy Joe Dupree's locker, and I was impressed in Pearson's locker. So Kyle, he looked up there and he seen that they didn't have their name tags on there. They had a chalkboard.
That's right, chalkboard. And Richie got into Staubach and
I got their name in chalk up there. Kyle, he wipes it off and goes over to a chalkboard and finds a piece of chalk. He puts K. Aguilar on there, and I said, "Let me have that chalk." I wiped off Preston Pearson and put A. Gilbert on there. So I just wonder what they thought when they got in there Monday morning.
Well, Brad, you were talking about before the game. I was sick that week. I had a flu or something, and I felt terrible. But my dad, I remember my dad was freaking out. You know, I'm thinking, God. And I said, I'm playing. I don't care what. But I really was sick. Well, I hear him talking on the phone. I had no idea who he was talking to. And so he comes in there. He said, get in a car. I'm like, get in a car? He's like, yeah, we're going to, I won't say which pharmacy. So I get in the car. We show up at this pharmacy in Groves. And I walk in, and there's like 10 of these, you know, looking back now, they're probably way younger than I am now, but old men, they're all standing there, and they take me in the back, and the pharmacist pulls out medicine, they start injecting me, and I'm thinking, and lucky they didn't drug test back then, there's no telling what they gave me, but yeah, they shot me up with all kinds of
friggin'
stuff.
Friggin' racehorse.
I have no idea what they gave me, but I did feel better. So, yeah.
That Odessa Permian coach would love to hear that story right now. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Shot up with steroids, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was talking about the Dallas Cowboys lockers. Nobody's a bigger Cowboy fan than me, and I was all excited. I was going to go find, you know, one of my favorite players. And as I'm walking in, Coach Troy stops me. Talking about something, I have no idea what. And the whole time I'm just like, not even listening to him. Please just let me go in there so I can find one of my favorite players. And finally he lets me go. I go in there, every locker's taken. So I had Tony Fritches. I had to kick Tony Fritches.
Tony Fritches, okay, there you go.
You were a third string kicker, weren't you?
No. No.
For the days, oh, that's man.
Funny. Yeah, I remember they had blow dryers in the locker rooms too. And blow dryers in those days for guys, you just said, you know, guys would blow dry your hair. And I thought, man, this is cool. You know, their locker room, I mean, looking back in retrospect, really wasn't near what they are today. But,
no.
You know, we thought it was pretty neat. The one thing I do remember about Texas Stadium was that it was cold.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, man.
You know, if y'all remember, there was a hole in the roof.
Yeah.
But it had a lot of shadows. And for some reason, down on the field, it was cold down there.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
It was cold when we left Port Neches. I remember that.
Yeah. It seemed more crowned than other fields, too. I felt like I was running downhill when I was going to the sideline, a lot worse than other fields.
Okay.
I felt faster.
But I remember right before the game, you know, I was picked as one of the captains to go out there and do the coin toss. And Odessa Permian had put a sign on the middle of the field, right where the coin toss was, said Mojo. And all I could think of doing was taking my helmet off and just spitting right in front of everybody, in front of those guys and everybody, just spit right on their mojo.
You were a big spitter. Son, I didn't realize you were such a spitter.
That was the only thing I guess I could think of at the time.
I'll tell you, the receivers and the quarterbacks always were in the first group to go out. And I don't know if y'all remember, but to go up the tunnel to the dressing room from the field, there was those big glass pane doors. I don't know if y'all remember seeing them. They opened up. Well, we're all standing there waiting to go out. And I'm looking out there and I'm saying, oh, my God, look at all these people. And I'm starting to shake a little bit. And then guy comes and opens the door and we step out. And the roar of that crowd when we stepped out there, it felt like it was going to blow us back in there and back in that tunnel.
I'll never forget
it. Oh, my God, man. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't know how many was there at the state game. Was it like 36,000 or something?
No, he says 23.
Oh, that was it?
It was a record at the time, I think, for a championship.
Yeah, we had more for the San Antonio League game than that
Okay.
one. Yeah,
I didn't know that. Right. I thought we had over 30.
You know, the environment back then, you take the interstate up to Houston or Dallas. I know y'all riding buses, but it was neat just being in your car because everybody was decorating their car, you know, with purple and white shoe polish and streamers and everything. And you'd be driving and people drive by honking like, and you know, you just felt a camaraderie. Everybody was just taking the caravan more or less. It was just a great party, man.
Everybody had CB like radios, you know, they were talking on them CB radios all the way up there.
It was like a 100-mile parade.
Yeah.
And to this day, I still talk to people like that were from TJ and other schools, and they all were going to the playoff game. So it wasn't just our fans. We had support from, believe it or not, from some of the people in the other communities, which was kind of neat. I still get people saying, oh, yeah, I was at that game, you know.
That's right, Carl. It was all Southeast Texas were supporting you guys, man.
And, Carl, if we weren't at the game, we would remember one of those dates where you remember where you were when you heard it.
Yeah.
You heard the Indians. Heard you guys.
Exactly.
With that football game. We haven't got to that game yet, Buck. Maybe it's time.
Yeah, let's talk about that game. Here we go. The Indians end up winning that game 20-10. And I've got my notes here. Mark Buchanan returned the opening kickoff 55 yards.
God.
And shortly after, Richie Etheridge scored a touchdown from 14 yards out.
Mm-hmm.
And the first play after the ensuing kickoff, a big play occurred when Giblin caused a fumble that was picked off by Jack Collazo for a 33-yard TD. PNG went up 14-0 in a span of 22 seconds. And Odessa Permian closed to within 14-10 in the third quarter, but a 60-yard pass to Gilbert put PNG out of a hole and never relinquished field position after that. And Etheridge sealed the win with a 14-yard TD with 7:33 left. What do you remember about that game? And Jack, I'd certainly want to hear your first-person account of that big play, too, in that first quarter.
Yeah, I do remember a lot about that week. And just kind of going back to what you said before I kind of give you a detail about the play, I remember finishing the San Antonio League game and looking up at the scoreboard, seeing the same thing you saw. And I said, oh, my goodness, we got to play Permian because they were the studs of the state back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I got to get ready. But anyway, getting back to the game, I just remember Mike hitting that dude. I mean, it was a loud pop. And the guy went down, Mike went down, and all I saw was the ball in the air. And, you know, it just went back to the fundamentals that they were teaching us back in the 9th and 10th grade is you're coming down and the ball was right there. I was there and I had the momentum. And next thing I know, I'm in the end zone.
Bingo.
Yeah.
You know, Jack, Mike told me, if I'm telling this right, that the lead blocker come at him and never touched him and just turned up the field.
Yeah, you know, I do remember Mike kind of putting his hands on the guy, and the guy just ran past him. And left him wide open to hit the guy in the backfield.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a pretty good view of it. I was the opposite defensive end, so I was doing trailing behind the line of scrimmage and running down in that because the play was opposite. I mean, Mike hits the guy perfect. Boom, ball pops up there. I don't think Mike realized it was a fumble at the time. But so perfect hit, boom, ball pops up in the air, and I'm watching it go up, and the next thing I know, perfect stride, like on the run, ball drops in. I mean, Jack picks it up, just hit perfect stride, and never broke stride all the way into the end zone. Of course, we're, you know, screaming and yelling and chasing.
Go,
him, so.
Jack.
Yeah, you look good doing it too, Jack. I tell you, man.
Good job, brother.
Everybody was standing up. I will say, talking about that play, when I was writing that book, Down Trails of Victory, Brad and I went up to Pasadena to talk to Coach Etheridge. And he was very gracious, very generous, let us ask him all the questions we wanted to ask him. We were in his office. Brad, you remember this.
Yeah.
And we got to this game and said, what about that Odessa-Permian game, Coach Etheridge? And the first thing he said about that game, he says, I remember that play where Giblin hit that guy. And that was his first statement about that Odessa-Permian game right there.
Man, you know, and I think, and I don't know what the other guys think, but I think we could have beat him worse. I remember that Coach Etheridge got kind of conservative. He kind of dialed it back a little bit. Now, obviously, we won the game, and that was the goal. But I think we could have beat him worse than 20-10. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Very conservative on offense after that. We were trying not to lose instead of going after a win. I think you're right.
I'll go ahead and get it out of the way because I know everybody's waiting.
We know what's coming. Here, go ahead, Carl.
I'm glad when you asked Coach Etheridge what he remembered about that game, he remembered that and not what I'm about to say. So
I remember it.
Yeah. He says Mark Buchanan returned opening kickoff 55 yards. Shortly after that, Richie Etheridge scored a TD from 14 yards out. Buck, there was a lot of stuff that went on between those two parts of that sentence. Mark returned the kickoff 55 yards, and I hadn't had a penalty on me all year. And, you know, so we line up first play, and I'm a little keyed up, and I jump offside. So 5 yards, we go back. So, and Andy's got mad because our receivers, they shuttled the plays back and forth. So Andy was a starter. He got to bring the play in on the first play. When I jumped, we go back to call another play, so Andy's not on the field now for the first snap of the ball.
Yeah, I missed the first snap of the state game.
Oh.
And it gets better. So 3 plays later, we run a pitch to Buchanan to the left of the field on towards our bench, and I was on the right side. And again, as we talked about earlier, you know, back then all we did, if you were on the backside, you took off and tried to cut the safety. Well, I started running. Safety had already come up, so I just kind of started running parallel to the down the one of the line markers. And Mark is literally like right on our sideline, and there's a guy behind him. Buchanan will tell you the guy was 10 yards behind him, but he wasn't. So I come in, hardest hit I've ever had on anybody. I knocked the guy into our bleachers. I look up, and all I see is Mark scoring, you know, 35-yard touchdown, whatever it was. And, you know, one of the great moments of my life, which ended about a half a second later when the penalty flag landed between my 2 legs. They called clipping. And I remember thinking, oh, Lord, I'm going to be the guy that's going to be remembered for the rest of his life. Getting the touchdown call back and they lose the game. Well, they called it back. So, and I really wanted to puke. And again, it was right in front of our bench. Coach Troy was the first one to come out there and pick me up, grab me, told me that was not a clip. You know, keep your head up, da da da. And so I was pretty numb at that point. I just, you know, you try to focus on what, but luckily we did score shortly after that. And then the next play, we're up 14-0 when Jack runs it in. So I did feel a lot better. Well, to this day, I've caught more grief over that than, you know, my family, my own brothers say they didn't see the rest of the game because they were all underneath the bench. They didn't want anybody to know they were my family.
But it really wasn't. It wasn't a clip.
Well, Coach Troy tells me it wasn't a clip. You know, and so the legend goes on all these years. I'm saying it wasn't a clip. Well, years go on, I'm like, I don't know if it was a clip or not. Coach Troy told me it wasn't. Well, we lost the game film. We didn't even have the game film for years. And we finally got it. But so 2 years ago during COVID, I'm sitting in my recliner one night. I'm not the best sleeper, watching Fox and the history of Odessa Permian football. I'm like, wow. So I'll watch this. So they start, you know, in the 30s, 40s, 1975. The first play they show is that play, the clip. And it's from their side. I'd never seen that angle. And so I got it on my phone. It was a horrible call. It really was. You know, and I'll be the first to admit it if I did it, but it was not a
call. I remember us watching the game film on that Monday after, and it was obvious to me. It didn't look like a clip even at the time. I mean, it was.
Yeah. Oh, it wasn't close.
I just, well, people over the years would start messing with me about it, and Coach Troy would hear it, and he'd take his glasses off, start walking over there and saying, you know, am I going to have to beat your ass right now? That was just how it, but yeah, it was a horrible feeling. Like I say, we scored twice really quick after that, which helped some, but thank God we won, or I might have had to move. I might have had to move to Odessa. they'd probably welcome me out there, yeah.
That's a great story, Cole. I can tell the seriousness and the emotions in that. I really can. That was tough.
I think what you hear is the hardest person on Carl was Carl, okay? The rest of his teammates never thought that, ever.
Yeah.
That just goes to show you, we all took everything so personally. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
So I just want to jump in real quick and say a couple of things that I remember about that game is before the game, during practice that week, I remember they were cocky and confident guys, okay? And they had said a lot of things in the newspaper that I remember coaches always used to highlight in yellow, you know, and stuff. And they were pretty much convinced they were the better team, they were going to win. So
they had the mojo.
Bingo. Yeah. So we didn't take that very kindly. We said, okay, good. You want to believe that you're great. You're exactly where we want you. The other thought about that was they had a really good game plan against our defense. They were running something. Wilson, I don't know if you remember this. They were almost like a sweep to one side. And we were very quick. We were very fast. We all ran to the football. Where they would run a sweep to one side and then do a cutback against the grain. And that got them, I think if you go back and look at the stats for that game, they actually outrushed us.
They did.
I think they actually had more yards. And because I think they had a really good game plan to go against what they thought were our strengths, and it worked for them.
It's funny you say that about them talking, because I remember them talking too, but as I'm watching this history of Odessa Permian football and they start talking about 75, they go to their 40-year reunion, and they're interviewing Kevin Steen and some of those other. And Kevin Steen was a hell of a player. I mean, he was. But they're interviewing him. And every one of their players said P&G was not even one of the better teams we faced that year. Kevin Steen goes, listen to this. He says, and again, this dude was good. He said, yeah, that's the first time we played in a dome stadium, which not really a dome stadium. And our depth perception was off. And I'm thinking – Kevin Steen's helmet was about a foot from my helmet. I don't know what kind of.
I never heard about that.
That was a good story. Yeah.
But none of them really gave us any credit on that deal. They were all like, yeah, we played them 9-10 times. We win 9 of them and whatever. And I'm like, hey, whatever. There's only one that mattered. So I don't really care.
That's right. They didn't give you credit. But let me tell you what, sitting back here in Port Neches, Texas, and Groves, you had what total? 35,000 people that's still giving y'all credit. That's one of the most amazing feats ever in the history of football happening here for us.
Well, thanks, Brad.
And Kirk said something about, you know, they had more rushing yards than us, but I think their total yards were like 210, 220 yards. It wasn't, you know, a huge amount. We just kind of throttled it back. I think like Gary said earlier, we literally were playing to stay ahead and win and
run the clock out and hold the ball, probably.
Exactly.
Be safe with the ball.
Yeah.
Well, you talked about their kicker earlier. We can talk about him too. I mean, he kicked a 62-yarder the week before and he missed some chip shots.
Oh, he flubbed one.
Yeah.
His first shot, I was thinking the same thing.
Well, I can tell you why he flubbed, because I was rushing him from the left-hand side and the holder didn't set it down. The ball wasn't set. And the kicker got under and popped it up. So it wasn't the kicker's fault. It was the holder's fault.
And your fault, Kirk.
Exactly. No, I was the slowest guy on the team, believe me. You know.
That goes to show you, Kurt, you got to have a little luck to go with it.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, the only thing I'm going to say is that we all remember this like it was yesterday. You know, I think as someone said earlier, we all are very, very close. We love each other. And we kind of this band of brothers. And you think about it, two different communities coming together. But the players, you know, supported. We had, you know, wonderful coaches, great community support, just the tradition of PNG, you know, but we love each other. And I think you got to trust each other. That's the other thing we did. We trusted each other and we knew somebody was going to make a play, you know. And someone said, you know, people ran to the ball, you know, people were running downfield, throwing blocks. I mean, everybody was laying it on the line and we knew that. And I think that helped inspire each of us.
You know, it didn't matter what your job was. Everybody loved it. Mm-hmm. Like blocking downfield. And I got to where I liked blocking downfield as much as I did catching the ball, you know, because that's what we had to do. And Coach Troy, he was big on that and didn't want to disappoint him, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that pass, that 60-yarder I had to turn around a little bit to catch the ball. And instead of turning to the middle of the field, I thought I had enough room on the sidelines to make the turn to go up the sidelines, and I didn't. I turned after I caught it and stepped out of bounds. Well, I don't know if y'all remember, we called a pitch pass play.
Yeah.
For the next play, we were on about the 10-yard line, and he pitched it to Buck, and I ran it like out route, but the defensive back was right there in front of me, and he intercepted it. Well, that gave them the ball on the 20, but it got us out of that hole down there.
Yeah.
I still think of something, you know, and Brad was talking about all the memories. And again, you know, you're 17, 18 years old and you win, you're like, hey, we deserved it. You know, well, so there's hundreds of other teams that thought they deserved it as well. But I remember after the game, my dad came in the locker room and he was, you know, he was probably more excited than I was looking back now. He said, you know, I know it's a big deal to you now, but 20, 30 years from now, you're going to realize exactly what you guys just did because, and he's right, looking back. And well, I mean, we haven't won one since, you know, it's it's not an easy thing to do. It's not just about talent or coaching. And I mean, it's all of that, but you got to get some breaks. You know, we went through the year relatively healthy. You know, I've had season tickets at PNG for as long as I can remember. And I can sit there and tell you years where teams were decimated with injuries, just half their starters are gone, and you can't win with that usually. And while we did have a few minor injuries, we didn't really have any that kept people out for half the season or the whole season, which is a big part of it.
We had Doc Finley.
Yeah. But, I mean, he can't fix a broken leg, and I've seen kids break their legs and stuff. But looking back now, it's even a bigger deal to me now than it even was then. My dad was right.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Yes, he was right.
I was walking out of a store one day. I don't even know who this guy was. And I had my Nomex on with my name on it. I'm walking outside and we meet. And I opened the door for him. He goes, come on out. And I went out and he goes, Andy Gilbert? I said, yeah. He goes, man, I used to watch you play football. Y'all won a state championship, didn't you? And I said, yeah. And he gave me his name. And I swear I'm terrible with it. I couldn't remember his name. But, I mean, that just goes to show you that's what, 40-something years later?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure. What, 48 years? How long ago was that, guys?
47 years ago.
My thought, I remember after the game, this feeling that, you know, bittersweet. On the one hand, you know, ever since you were a little kid, you dreamed Sandlot football, playing for a state championship and winning a state championship. And it's the greatest excitement ever. You've accomplished the dream of your life. But at the same time, as soon as you pull that jersey off, you realize it'll be the last time you ever have a PNG jersey on. So it's both extremely satisfying, but also bittersweet at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's why, as opposed to like the Lincoln game, for me at least, it was great, but you know, it also came with the realization that it was over.
Yeah, Kirk, I remember in the field house after the game, I'm balling, you know, won a state championship, and then I got to thinking about something else, and Bert Darden comes up to me, goes, are you okay? I said, yeah. He said, well, why are you crying so bad? I said, because Bert, this will probably be my last football game I'll ever play.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And he was right.
And for sure, the last time you ever wore a B&G uniform.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a good comment there, Andy.
Yeah, at that age, at 18 years old, feeling that much joy and that much sadness at the same time was really right. different and weird. I'd never experienced yeah. that before. And the, both those just bombarded me. I remember that.
True. I guess it really was that way. Yeah.
Yes. Seeing those zeros on the clock, it all hit yeah. at the same time. It was like tug of yeah. war. Which one's going to overtake mm-hmm. the other?
There's yeah. one thing I got to say this. Whenever we came home that night, we all went to Kurt's house.
Everybody was yeah. in Dallas.
All our parents were in Dallas.
Yeah. I remember we got home and everybody passed around, hey, that's a party at my house, party at my house, party at the house.
Well, I remember in the party, I stood up and said, boy, that Mojo Gumbo show was good.
Mojo Gumbo.
Andy, what the hell's a Mojo?
Mojo Gumbo.
And it lasted so late that by the time the newspapers, the Beaumont Enterprise and Port Arthur News, we got the paper that morning. We were reading the front page of the Beaumont Enterprise at the party. It was in the cover of the front page, state championship.
For the record, I wasn't at the party. I was at church again, I think.
There you go.
You're a powerful guy.
Yeah.
There were some bad dudes I ran around with. Man, geez.
This is just great, the stories. But following that football season and the game, we have some notes that y'all were treated to a banquet hosted by the Port Natchez and the Grove Chamber of Commerce at the Brad Club, described as the largest affair of its kind ever held in Mid-County. Do y'all remember anything about the festivities afterwards?
Yeah, I do. If I'm remembering this right, do y'all remember who the guest speaker was?
Yeah, Billy Kilmer.
Yeah, and I hated the Redskins. I
really?
Was like, okay. Why in the hell did they get yeah. Billy Kilmer?
Yeah.
I was like,
he was driving through, so they got him.
Because he did it for free, and Roger Staubach was going to charge $10,000. That's why.
Well, we actually got to meet him. He actually it was ended up being pretty cool, but I was not a big Redskin fan. But yeah.
Well, gentlemen, we're getting toward the end. I want to thank y'all for reliving that season. I do want to now call the role of letterman of the 1975 state champions. These names are taken from the powwow, published December 19th, 1975, in Kyle Aguillard's kickoff column. These are in numerical order and by school classification. Seniors: Gary Jofro, Gary Davis, Wilson Weber, Ricky Hagler, Jack Colazzo, Anthony Garcia, Mike Giblin, Mark Buchanan, Carl Johnson, Mel Ransom, Dougald McDougald, Ty Becker, Mike Boudreaux, Wade Terrell, Don Daspit, Kirk Romero, Kelly Hall, Buck Miller, Lee Blackman, Vaughn Robinson, Jerry Playa, Carl Segura, Leo Goldberg, Carl Fry, Andy Gilbert, Randy Johnson, Kyle Aguillard, and Ricky Simpson. And then juniors, Jackie Havard, Ronnie Giblin, Richie Etheridge, Mark Lawson, Carl Griffith, Blake Green, Kevin Landry, Owen Shipline, Kevin Hebert, Jeff DeQueer, Ronnie Goldman, Terry Gilbo, Tony Hollier, Carl Daltreve, Phil Meyer, Craig Guillory, Philip Fuller, Donald Hilton, and Brian Landry, and sophomores Jeff Cooley and Howard Kern. Do you have anything to say about any of those lettermen that I just recognized?
I mean, I know it's on all of our minds, and Gary and I were just talking, and please chime in if I mess this up, but I think by my count, you know, as you get older, unfortunately, you start seeing your friends and your teammates pass away, and I think there's five of them that are on that list that are no longer with us. Anthony Garcia, Ty Becker, Jeff DeQueer, Terry Gilbo, and Tony Hollier, and I hope I hadn't left anybody out.
Wade Terrell.
You know, who? No, Wade's alive.
Is he?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Carl, I was getting sad there until you got interrupted.
Yeah, me too. That's the moment we've been waiting for, Buck.
I'm telling you.
No, Wade's alive. He actually came to the reunion. If Jack, if you'd have came, you'd have got to talk to him, but never mind. But no, I mean, you know, they were great teammates and even better friends, yeah. And sad that we lost those guys.
Yeah. And I would like exactly. to add, just for a point of order here, my brother, Craig Romero, was also a letterman on the state champion team, but much to his chagrin, he got left off all of the plaques and didn't get a letter jacket. And
really?
Yeah.
Well, you can blame Aguilar. It's his column up there that he got these numbers, these names from.
Well, he never got a letter jacket either.
And really?
Yeah, he got left off. I know.
Well, I'm glad you have an opportunity to recognize your brother.
Yeah. I did.
Yeah. I didn't know that. That would suck.
Yeah. Sorry. His name is on the plaque. Excuse me. I do remember that. Never mind. Sorry about that.
Anything else on that about the players? Okay. Fellas, we're coming to the close of the podcast. I want to thank you for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we close?
Any comments you may want to make to our future generations of Indians?
Well, I tell you what, Buck and Brad, I've had a lot of people, young people, ask me, you know, what it takes to be a state champion. And I tell them it takes a lot of heart, and you got to have a little luck to go with it.
And I think you can tell in our banter back and forth that we give each other hell, but we're like brothers. I think that's a big part of it. Kids today, hopefully, you know, they're not just teammates, they're friends, and you genuinely care about the guy next to you and want them to be just as successful as you want yourself to be. So I feel lucky to be friends with these guys this day. I joke around maybe a little too much at times, but I love them all, and I hope they know that.
Yeah, we feel you're lucky to be friends with us too, Carl. So.
Yeah, thanks, Carl.
Oh boy, I tried to be serious for once.
I know.
I'm starting to get weepy on the.
You're lucky you didn't lose the game for us in the state championship.
I wouldn't be invited to this. I know that.
No, you sure wouldn't be.
I only say that the lessons that I learned, the teamwork, the hard work, you know, the esprit de corps, whatever you want to call it, are lessons that have taken me through my entire life. I always reference back to this, the experience that I have playing with these guys on this team have really been a foundation for any other success I may have had in life in the future, for sure.
But I tell you what, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me besides my kids and my wife. Winning a state championship was, it was just unbelievable. And how you get there, you know, only one team goes back then, you know.
The journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The journey.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Anything else?
Well, Brad and Buck, thank y'all. I mean, we appreciate you getting us together, and we appreciate y'all hosting this. I mean, it's really been a joy and a blessing, and we do, I think, as someone said, we do see each other, you know, throughout the year, but it's great to be able to reminisce about all this.
Yeah. Well, we've got it captured, and I mean this, Wilson and Gary and Andy and Kirk and Jack and Carl, because you've shared some stories, some good stuff from Dazed and Confused, as he mentioned, the Coca-Cola Frisbee. I'm looking at some scribble notes here, losing a bus on the way to the state game, and Mojo Gumbo, Andy, I think you were talking about that. But anyway, all the tributes to Coach Troy and the others, I just want to tell you, on behalf of myself and Buck and all the Indians, I really mean this. You guys were younger than us, and I remember exactly where I was. I listened to the ball game, but we're honored now to listen to you men, because you're just not teammates that love each other. You're good men. We forgot that part. You're just good people. You're good men, and I appreciate it. We just recently heard from the 1955 state team, too. And it's the same thing. We've got a pattern here, Buck. They're just all good people. And thank you for recording this, because this is going to go down in history.
Thank you very much, Brad.
Thanks a bunch, guys.
Love you guys.
Thank you all for doing this.
Have a good day.
Anything else from any of y'all that you want to add before we close? Because I'm ready to close it out. I want to give you an opportunity to say anything you want before I do.
Yeah, just
thanks.
Thank all you guys, man. It's always full of laughs when we get together. And, man, I love it to death. And I guess we'll see y'all in October, huh?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. October.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
That sounds good. Gentlemen, it was an absolute honor and privilege to be able to have you as our guest today on Down Trails of Victory podcast. It seems appropriate that that 1975 playoff run happened on the 50th anniversary year of PNG football. During 1975 homecoming events, players from that first 1925 Indian football team were recognized at the pep rally and honored at halftime. Gentlemen, we are just 3 years away from the 100th anniversary of PNG football and the 50th anniversary of your state championship run. I hope each of you and all your teammates and coaches who hear this podcast will be able to likewise be recognized at that time for your historic accomplishment. Thank you again for blazing a trail of victory upon which followed the hearts and spirits of not only the people of Port Neches and Groves, but all of Southeast Texas. Congratulations on your accomplishment. This concludes this edition of Down Trails of Victory podcast. Thank you, Jack Collazo, Gary Jofro, Andy Gilbert, Kirk Romero, Carl Segura, Wilson Weber, Judge Brad Burnett, and listeners for being with us today. Until we meet again, happy trails to you.
This brings us to the close of another Down Trails of Victory podcast. Be sure to check out our website at wrinklefordcreativearts.com, as well as our Down Trails of Victory Facebook page, where you will find additional content, contact and email information, and an opportunity to purchase the best-selling book, Down Trails of Victory, The Story of Port Neches Groves High School Football by Dr. John Buck Ford. Until we meet again, we wish the trails you travel are happy and victorious.